to WMNF on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to rage, especially in places like Florida. And this hour, we're going to be joined by a lawyer who represented parents who defeated Florida's governor in court in a fight over mask requirements in schools. We'll also take your calls at 813-239-9663. You can also email your comments. The email address is dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. If you text, please sign your name. So here are some of the latest coronavirus numbers. I've taken these from the Sunday Tampa Bay Times. Florida officials reported nearly 152,000 positive coronavirus infections over the week that ended Thursday. That means an average of almost 21,700 infections per day. During the third week back in school, children led the state in new infections. COVID-19 cases increased by 28% among Floridians 19 and older. 19 and under, that is. Kids now account for one-third of new infections. Florida has had nearly 3.2 million positive coronavirus cases during the pandemic and nearly 44,000 deaths. The state added 1,727 deaths last week. That's the highest number reported in a single week in Florida. According to the state, as of Thursday, 68% of Florida residents age 12 and up have received at least one dose of the coronavirus vaccine. About 56% of eligible residents have been fully vaccinated, but 41% of Florida's total population is unvaccinated. That includes children 11 and under who are not eligible for the vaccination. Florida's positivity rate fell to 16.8% in the past week. That's down from 19.8% the week before. But positivity rates in the teens still means that the virus is spreading like wildfire. Positivity rates were the highest among this age group, 12 to 19-year-olds. 23.1% of their coronavirus tests came back positive. So teenagers, about 23.1% positivity rate. So because of all that, several school districts across the state have tried to protect children from infection by enacting mask mandates in schools. That defied an executive order by Governor Ron DeSantis, but that order was ruled illegal on Friday by a Leon County judge. So here's the story from WMNF's Daniel Figueroa IV, who tells us that the judge ruled that the state cannot punish school districts for implementing mask mandates with medical opt-outs. DeSantis's evidence for banning mandates ended up losing the case for him.
The ruling means schools can continue to mandate masks and require medical opt-outs, free from fear of retaliation. Judge John Cooper praised both legal teams for being thorough, but he also said the governor's advisors should have done more homework.
I don't say that the governor has time enough to read a report that's that thick, but his advisors do. So the statement in the executive order is just incorrect.
Cooper was referring to the language in the July 30th executive order that set up the ban on mask mandates. In it, the governor used an unreleased Brown University study to make the argument that masking in schools was ineffective. But that's not what the study said. Cooper read from the study itself.
We would emphasize that in general, this literature suggests in-person school can be operated safely with appropriate mitigation, which typically includes universal masking. It would be premature to draw any alternative conclusions about this question based on this preliminary data.
Later, he added,
what I read to you is a defense exhibit, not a plaintiff's exhibit.
He also mentioned a Georgia study DeSantis cited as making a case against masks, but a look at that whole study showed it also recommends universal masking. The defense also argued that the newly enacted Parents' Bill of Rights precludes local school districts from mandating masks against a parent's wishes. The passage of the law was seen as a major victory for Republicans during this year's legislative session. Cooper said the executive order was designed to use the Parents' Bill of Rights to allow the state to punish districts mandating masks. But there, too, he said, more reading needed to be done. Cooper said that a full reading of the statute shows school districts have due process rights. Those rights mean if a parent has an issue with a regulation, the school board has the right to demonstrate why that regulation is necessary.
It doesn't ban mask mandates at all. It doesn't require that a mask mandate must exclude a parental opt-out. at all.
Josh Sheridan is one of the many Tampa Bay lawyers who represented the parents suing DeSantis in the case.
That's kind of a problem they had with their legal argument. That's a problem they had with their witness testimony. That's a problem the governor had in writing the order, is picking and choosing parts of what they were using and not addressing the other parts.
Ultimately, Cooper ruled the governor's actions to be an overreach and unconstitutional use of his power. DeSantis's office and the Department of Education said both plan to appeal. The governor quickly issued a statement slamming the ruling. He said the ruling was made with incoherent justifications not based in science and facts. But Sheridan said science was on their side and will likely still be on an appeal.
Every pediatrician we've talked to says you should be doing it, and even the pediatricians for the parents that the defendants called said they should be doing it.
For WMNF News, I'm Daniel Figueroa IV.
So thanks to Daniel for that story. And just a reminder, later in the show, we're going to be joined by another lawyer for the parents who defeated DeSantis in court. And contrary to the judge's order on Friday, Florida Secretary of Education Richard Corcoran withheld monthly salaries yesterday from board members in Alachua and Broward counties. Those counties and their school boards supported the mask requirements. That marks a major turning point in the weeks-long fight over face coverings in schools. That's according to Politico. And also yesterday, Governor DeSantis, said he would appeal the judge's ruling. Here's what he said in Jacksonville yesterday morning.
I think we're going to have really good grounds to appeal in terms of the First District Court of Appeal. And look, at the end of the day, what the Parents' Bill of Rights requires, in our judgment, is that parents be given the right to opt out if they think that's in the best interest of their kid.
Well, that's Governor Ron DeSantis speaking yesterday. He said he will appeal the judge's ruling from last Friday. And you can weigh in on this by calling 813-239-9663. You can also email your comments to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Do you have a kid in school, a child in school? What's your school's policy or your county's policy on mask mandates? Are masks optional? Are they mandated? Can you opt out with a doctor's note, or is it easier than that to opt out? Let us know, and let us know what you think and what your children are saying about how that's being enforced or how it's being complied with. 813-239-9663. Just a reminder, during this show, we are going to hear from one of the lawyers for the parents who sued and won against Governor Ron DeSantis. According to Axios, as of yesterday, Tampa Bay school districts from Citrus to Sarasota had reported nearly 17,000 confirmed COVID cases among students and staff. That's a milestone that took months longer to reach last school year. So 17,000 confirmed COVID cases in the Tampa Bay area among school kids. Has it happened at your school? Have you gotten indications that there have been either people who have tested positive or have either gotten, maybe they've been quarantined and so on? Let us know what you think. 813-239-9663, or you can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name if you text. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. It's 10:15 in the morning, and my name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to an interview show on WMNF. Next hour is Janelle Irwin. She's going to be in at 11:06, and during this show, we're going to hear from one of the lawyers. I'm going to put on the air a phone call here from Elizabeth in Punta Gorda, and give me a second to say, all right, let me go on to play some more of what we heard from the judge on Saturday, and then we'll go to the phone lines right after this. The judge, his name is John Cooper, he's in Leon County. He spoke for a long time on Friday to explain his ruling. We're going to hear a couple of short segments here during his ruling. As we heard in Daniel's report, Judge Cooper slammed Governor Ron DeSantis and his legal team for their interpretation of the science about how masks protect children and the rest of the community. So here is just a little bit about what the judge said about masks.
The ruling means schools.
I grant a permanent injunction and enjoin the defendants, except for the governor, from violating the Florida Parents' Bill of Rights by taking any action on whatever basis they take it, by taking any action to effect a blanket ban on face mask mandates with no parent opt-out by local school boards, and I grant an injunction against denying the school boards their due process rights granted by the statute to permit them to demonstrate the reasonableness of the mandate and other factors stated in law. I am not enjoining the defendants from enforcing the Florida Bill of Rights so long as they enforce the complete statute and don't omit portions of it. I'm just banning them from violating the Florida Bill of Rights. So they still have full powers. It's a law in Florida, is enforced, it's passed by the legislature, signed by the governor. Defendants can enforce the law, but they have to do so in accordance with the terms of the law. And at least until someone rules otherwise, it's as in the means that I've set out. They must allow a due process proceeding of some sort to allow for a showing of the reasonableness, etc. I also enjoin the defendants, but not the governor. I'm not saying the governor can go out and start doing these things. I'm just saying I don't think his role is in the same scope of enforcement as these other agencies are. I also enjoin the defendants' name from enforcing the executive order and the policies it caused to be generated and any resulting policy or action which violates the parents' Bill of Rights.
Well, that is Judge John Cooper of Leon County speaking on Friday as he was giving the reasons for his ruling against Governor Ron DeSantis. He said the parents' Bill of Rights applies, and it's the governor and the state of Florida that was violating it by not letting the school boards have these mask mandates and say why they're important to the students, to the health of the students. What do you think? We have some callers on the line. We had somebody drop off earlier, and if you want to call back, I think you're from Charlotte County or from Lee County, so please call back. Was it Elizabeth? I apologize I dropped you off, I think, before you got on the air, but let's hear now from Karen in Dunedin. Karen, what do you think about the judge's ruling and about the whole idea of universal masking in schools?
Okay, well, first off, I'm a grandmother to kids in Pinellas County, and I'm sorry, but I do not think that the school board should take what the parents say into account. They should take into account what All Children's Hospital is saying, what Tampa General is saying, because just like a religious family that refuses to give their kid a blood transfusion, judges have ruled and said, you have to do this. You have to take care of your child. These people aren't thinking right, not protecting their children and not protecting other people's children. I don't think it has nothing to do with parental rights. It's about protecting us as a community as a whole.
All right. Thanks, Karen. And I should say that Pinellas is kind of the oddball case in this area among the largest of the counties in our area. It's one of the only ones that doesn't have a mask mandate right now. Sarasota just enacted one. Hillsborough has had one. We're going to talk more about Pinellas County and why that's a specific different issue here, because they haven't enacted a mask mandate yet, and we'll see if they will. All right. Thanks, Karen. Thanks for those thoughts. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a bit, but right now I'm going to play a little bit more of, let's talk right now about Pinellas. Since Karen brought up the county Pinellas, the ruling by the judge sets up an interesting situation in Pinellas County. According to Axios, the swing vote last week to keep masks optional there was by a board member who did want mandatory masks but didn't want to break the law. And so I invited a Pinellas County school board member on the show today. She couldn't make it because they're involved in training today. So for now, masks remain optional in Pinellas County schools. Last Tuesday, the Pinellas County school board voted to keep masks optional in Pinellas County schools. They voted against holding a special meeting to discuss instituting a mask mandate. So let's hear that story from WMNF's Daniel Figueroa IV. He produced this a week ago. This was before the judge rebuked Governor DeSantis' executive order against mask mandates.
Board member Caprice Edmond motioned to call the special meeting.
I am asking the board to take a vote today to hold a special meeting to implement a 90-day emergency mask policy and challenging the rule of the Department of Health.
Masks aren't required in Pinellas schools, but strongly recommended. And with a 4-3 vote, board members decided that's the way it will stay. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in late July updated its guidance on masking in schools amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The CDC now suggests everyone, student, faculty, and teacher, wear masks even if they are vaccinated. The Delta variant of COVID-19 has caused massive spikes in hospitalizations and new daily cases, and it's sending children to the hospital more than last year's strain. During all of last fall's semester, Pinellas had fewer than 700 confirmed COVID cases among children in school. In less than 2 weeks this fall semester, there have been nearly 800 cases among students. As of Tuesday, nearly 3,000 students and faculty from the district were quarantined due to COVID exposure. Edmond said that's why a mandate should be in place, even if the governor doesn't agree.
We have a duty to provide a safe learning environment for all students. And if that's implementing a mask mandate, I think that's the right choice.
Governor Ron DeSantis issued an executive order railing against mask mandates and promising to punish any school district that attempted to mandate masks shortly after the CDC guidelines came out. But leading health experts, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommend adhering to the guidelines, especially because masks help prevent the wearer from spreading, not just contracting virus. DeSantis's order led to an emergency rule from the health department saying schools could mandate masks with an opt-out for parents. Some school boards have been defiant. Florida's largest districts, including Miami-Dade, Broward, and Hillsborough, have instituted mask mandates with strict, if any, opt-out. Some districts, like Hillsborough, make the argument that a medical opt-out puts them in compliance with the emergency rule. The State Board of Education hasn't agreed. It's also threatened to punish districts who implement mandates. Pinellas made its decision after an emotional day. Pro and anti-mask activists gathered outside the district office 2 hours before the 10 a.m. meeting to wave signs and chant. The two groups clashed but remained civil. Board members listened to comment from 99 people for nearly 4 hours before voting down Edmond's motion. One man, Glenn Riesling, said a mask mandate would be like child abuse.
What actual evidence? Where's the science? Where's the evidence? And if you can't produce the evidence, how is this not contemplating continuing child abuse?
Riesling was asked to stay on topic during public comment, then asked to leave. He was arrested by school resource officers when he refused to comply with either order. Many of the speakers with children in Pinellas schools were also doctors. All, including family physician Hajar Kadivar, agreed that a mask mandate should be in place.
We are in a medical and public health crisis. Both adult and pediatric hospitals are overrun with COVID patients. Last week, I admitted a patient to hospice because of this. We need the opportunity to discuss all the measures afforded to us to help limit the spread of COVID for the health of our entire community.
For WMNF News, I'm Daniel Figueroa IV in Largo.
Well, that was Daniel's report from a week ago. Of course, just a reminder, Pinellas County right now does not have a mandatory mask policy in its schools. And that was from a week ago. This was before the judge's ruling last Friday that said that the governor had overstepped his authority when he enacted an executive order that forbid local school districts from creating mask mandates to protect people in the community. What do you think? 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name. If you do text, and it's 10:25 in the morning, just a reminder that in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by an attorney. He was representing one of the attorneys representing the parents that beat Ron DeSantis in court last Friday, when John Cooper, the judge in Leon County, made his ruling. We'll hear a little bit more about Brevard County right now because the judge's ruling on Friday paved the way for the boards in other counties like Brevard, Charlotte, Lee, Lake Volusia, and Osceola counties to call meetings to talk about mask policies. And at least two of those counties, Brevard and Lee, instituted mask mandates yesterday. So this is after the judge made that ruling. And we're going to hear about the Brevard County School Board, which voted 3-2 at an emergency meeting yesterday to require students and adults to wear masks to lessen the spread of COVID-19. Joe Burns reports the Lake County Board has decided to hold a special meeting this coming Friday to review COVID-19 data. Here's Joe Burns' report.
The Brevard County decision follows a ruling last week by a Leon County Circuit Judge overturning Governor Ron DeSantis' ban on mask mandates. Board Chair Misty Belfort supports the mandate, which is in effect for 30 days. She says in the first 3 weeks since school opened, the prevalence of COVID-19 on campus has far outpaced its presence in the community at large. She sees, quote, a serious crisis and a small window of opportunity to address it.
I don't know that masks are the silver bullet, and I'm not in favor of long-term mask mandates. But I do know without a doubt that what we are currently doing is not working, and the options available to us to respond are incredibly limited.
Lake County schools are taking a more cautious approach to the judge's ruling, which hasn't been signed yet and could be appealed. In Central Florida, I'm Joe Burns.
Well, that's two more counties ruled yesterday. Brevard and Lee, they instituted mask mandates, and several more. You heard about Lake, Volusia, Osceola, and Charlotte counties are considering them in meetings, special meetings, to talk about the mask policies. We're going to go now to CJ in Sulphur Springs, and he is, it sounds like he might be opposed to these mask mandates. Is that right, CJ? What's on your mind? CJ, we'd like to put you on the air. Would you like to say anything? All right, we don't have CJ. We're going to go to... Right now, we're going to hear from the judge again, and this is the second soundbite I'm going to play from the judge. Judge John Cooper slammed Ron DeSantis and his legal team for their interpretation of the science about how masks protect children and the rest of the community. Here is Judge John Cooper speaking last Friday.
An executive order and or an agency action or an executive action which bans, under all circumstances, a face mask mandate for school children without a parental opt-out, does not meet constitutional muster because such action exceeds the authority given to the defendants under the Parents' Bill of Rights law passed by the Florida legislature. Seeking to enforce a policy through the executive order and through actions that violate the provisions of the Parents' Bill of Rights is by definition arbitrary and capricious because there is no reasonable or rational justification for not following all of the provisions of a duly enacted and authorized Florida law. A policy or action which violates the Parents' Bill of Rights cannot be lawfully enforced by the defendants. The executive order and or agency action as described above and heard in this case, which violates the Parents' Bill of Rights, exceeds any authority to issue the executive order to the extent it sets in motion or causes a violation of the Parents' Bill of Rights and exceeds the authority of the defendants that was granted to them by the legislature in the Parents' Bill of Rights. An executive order ordering or setting in motion a violation of the Parents' Bill of Rights is without legal authority. Further such action, in other words, ordering something which or taking an action which is a violation of a Florida statute, is by definition arbitrary, unreasonable, and violates the separation of powers doctrine because it would exceed the powers granted by the legislature in the Parents' Bill of Rights because such action would not permit the school board authority, which has adopted a mask mandate, to demonstrate the reasonableness of it Whether it was necessary to achieve a compelling state interest is narrowly tailored and not otherwise served by less restrictive means, all of which is expressly permitted by the legislature in the Florida Bill of Rights. As previously stated earlier in this order, a school district adopting a policy such as a mask mandate is acting within its discretion. It has been given this discretion by the Florida legislature in the Parents' Bill of Rights. So long as the requirements for the policy provided for in the Parents' Bill of Rights are met, I'm not saying the legislature has unbridled discretion. The school boards, they can't just do whatever they want to. They can't do that. They have to meet the requirements the legislature set forth to authorize them to take certain acts involving education and health. But so long as they do that, the doctrine of separation of powers requires that the discretionary power exercised by the school board cannot be interfered by the judiciary or by the executive branch of government, and neither the judiciary nor the executive can substitute their judgment for the school board's power.
Well, that was Judge John Cooper speaking on Friday as he was handing out his ruling in the case of parents who are suing Governor Ron DeSantis because of his executive order that banned local school boards from enacting mandatory masking in schools. And we're speaking right now with Charles R. Gallagher III. He's an attorney in St. Petersburg. He was also one of the attorneys for those parents, representing those parents in their lawsuit, in their victory against Governor Ron DeSantis. Welcome back to WMNF, Charles.
Morning, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. So what was your first reaction when you heard the judge? I mean, it was a really long ruling. He spoke for a really long time because I think what he wanted to do, and you can add to this if you'd like, but I think he didn't want to make it sound like he just made a decision willy-nilly. He really wanted to lay out what his decision was based on, and he did that over the course of hours. And so you could kind of tell kind of early on that he might be leaning this way because of how it was going. But how does that compare to how other judges give out their rulings, and what were you thinking when he was making this ruling?
I will say it was probably longer than you would expect in a normal hearing. This case is definitely one that's more important in terms of statewide impact and kind of long-term impact. So we were just thoroughly impressed with the care he took in the research and laying out the facts, talking about the evidence that was before him, that what led to his ruling. And, early on, we saw some tea leaves that might look like they were going our way. We were feeling good about that. And when he finally said, I'm not giving you relief on this count, that to us was our implication he's giving us relief on other counts. So we felt that was kind of a harbinger of probably good things on the ruling. So yes, that probably was, I can't recall in history of having maybe a longer oral pronouncement as part of a ruling. But again, this case is not like any random run-of-the-mill case. It's very, very unique. So I think he did what was appropriate. And laying out with great care, with great certainty, all the facts he relied upon, what evidence he relied upon, him weighing the evidence, looking at our experts versus their expert, and making findings of fact as to whatever danger was found to be by Delta. So we had good feelings when we heard some of the statements, and thankfully they were brought out with a ruling in our favor at the end of the day.
And it wasn't the case where the judge just said, I think it's in my personal opinion that masks are important or anything like that. He was basing it on the separation of powers between the legislature and the governor. And he said in this executive order, the governor violated the Parents' Bill of Rights that was passed by the legislature.
And the irony is, in the case, one of the defenses asserted by the governor and by the defendants was a separation of powers defense. And we found that to be kind of ironic because at the end of the day, the separation of powers overreach of the governor was what led to this lawsuit and the findings in favor of the parents and prevailing on the lawsuit. So we thought that was a little bit ironic. But yes, he again, was very careful and methodical in going through what the Parents' Bill of Rights had entitled and then how the executive order at issue became a separation of powers violation of itself and became the unlawful pronouncement that the court ruled that it was.
We're speaking with Charles R. Gallagher III. He's an attorney in St. Petersburg. He represented the parents in their case against the governor when the governor's executive order said that local school boards could not enact mask mandates to protect people from COVID-19. Tell us a little bit about these parents. Why were they so concerned? Why was this such a big deal to them that they'd actually sue the governor of the third largest state in the country?
Certainly. So we had a number of parents approach us and indicated their resolve and their concerns that forbidding the ability for individual school districts to make their own decisions and imposing this one-size-fits-all approach to all 67 counties in the state of Florida felt for them to be a violation of the Constitution and felt for them to be a safety issue in terms of schools, that if you have schools in certain counties where the rates are through the roof, prohibiting them from having a mask mandate with only medical opt-out put their kids in peril, put their kids in risk. And these parents gave great testimony during the trial. One of the parents would come to school every day at lunch and have lunch with her kids because she did not want to have her kids in a commingled environment of masks and not masks for safety purposes. One of the other parents talked about when she went to school for the orientation, that nobody was wearing masks. Staff, teachers, students, nobody was wearing masks at all. And she had extreme concern and peril for her kids in the school system. And of course, she said that the numbers that were coming out from the CDC metrics and such supported that. We had a positivity rate of late of 20% for pediatric students and patients. And that's saying one out of every four kids test positive for COVID. I think that was significant for them, that you had these areas of impact where the whole entire state was under that red classification of being in a hot zone. So they were all concerned for their student safety and really for the safety of all students in the school systems.
We heard the governor yesterday say that he is going to appeal this ruling. I heard from our reporter, Daniel, spoke to one of your colleagues the other day who said that your case is rock solid. If they appeal, we're going to win it on the merits. But what are your thoughts about an appeal? I'm sure you're confident enough to say that you're going to win, but tell us more. How would you break down the appeal? The governor's going to appeal. How are you going to counter that?
Sure. And the first thing out of the box is on the issue of appealing a trial court ruling. A party can't appeal a ruling because they don't like it, because it didn't go their way. There's got to be some underlying legal error on the part of the court or the judge. So the judge has to make some mistake in the case for there to be an appeal right for a party. So out of the box, we think that we haven't seen and we haven't evaluated any legal errors made by the trial court that would support an appeal. Can they go ahead and file an appeal? They pay their filing fee, they file notice of appeal, sure they can. But on the merits, you must have some underlying error or mistake by the trial court to support that. So we fully expect them to go ahead and appeal it. They were saying they were going to appeal it within seconds of the announcement, so hard to say what they were evaluating as legal error. But at that point, they would file an initial brief with the court, the first DCA, or potentially even the Supreme Court. This is one of those cases where you could have an elevation for the Supreme Court, much like you had in the election case of 2000. So that's possible, but they may go ahead and go to the first DCA. That was what happened last year in the school reopening case. It's different facts, but we're thinking of the one or the other. At that point, the court will take their brief, will file an answer brief to it, and they have to point out where the court made that legal error at the trial court level and why that legal error provides them with the right to remand, to overturn, to vacate the trial court ruling. So, again, we feel pretty confident with the ruling we were given. And one of the things that has been important about that two-hour-plus oral pronouncement was it laid out the basis for the decision. There was nothing that was general about it. Well, everyone knows why the court ruled the way the court did. He made detailed findings of fact. He made detailed conclusions of law there. And I reconciled that as kind of a bulletproof order at the end of the day. Yes, that will be reduced to a more brief written order that is signed by the judge, and that will be the actual document that's appealed. But the underlying ruling for that would be a good time, was so detailed for a reason. And that reason was to, we believe, support and sustain the trial court's findings and rulings. And we think that ruling was one that would be bulletproof to an appeal.
We're speaking with Charles Gallagher III, an attorney in St. Petersburg who represented the parents who sued the governor over the executive order that forbid school boards from enacting mask mandates. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. It's 10:41 in the morning. This is 88.5 FM. I'm Sean Canaan. And so, Charles, let me ask you this about the specifics of that the judge mentioned, these studies that the governor and his people who support him bring up all the time. There's this Brown University study, and there was this study out of Georgia, and all the time, including even in court, the governor and his lawyers said that these studies, the Brown University and the Georgia study, indicate that children aren't safe wearing masks. But the judge read the full studies, and he scolded the governor and his team for not doing so. What did the judge say the studies actually said?
So the expert used by the state is a gentleman named Dr. Jay Bhattacharya out of Stanford. And he's a researcher. He's a professor of some health economics courses at Stanford. When you speak to him and cross-examine him, he clearly admits he's not a practicing physician. He's never treated a patient in his entire career. He's never treated anyone with COVID. And his entire existence with COVID is to review the research of others and conduct some research in a few isolated examples out in California and draw opinions on that. And he was the author of this great Barrington Declaration, which was a kind of a manifesto by three, I would say, outlier type experts, doctors and the like, saying that the only way to really to beat this whole COVID thing is to have populations that are very susceptible to illness, such as elderly folks and the like, to have them be taken care of. But for everybody else, a herd immunity would be the way to go. And this was a study that was criticized by Fauci, by everybody from the CDC, and really found to be kind of outside the norm in terms of medicine. The court looked at all those studies, and Dr. Bhattacharya's affidavit was a 900-page submission. He had about an 18-page affidavit with about 980 pages of studies that are attached to that. Every one of those studies was conducted prior to the existence of Delta. And one of the themes of the case was that Delta is different. Last year we were fortunate to have a COVID Alpha strain or COVID Wuhan strain, the initial strain, that did not affect children much and was not as high a transmissibility rate and a higher viral load. All those things were not present with Delta, where you have, again, a transmissibility rate, the R-naughts we talked about with the scientists and such, and meaning that if their old COVID variant had an R-naught of one or two, meaning one person would infect one or two people, the current R-naught would be in a 6 to 8 range, so a person infected would infect 6 to 8 people. So the fact that it spread so fast and has a high yield rate was something the court found very important, and he was very, very careful with, I think he read every word of every page of every document in this case, and I'm sitting behind probably 3 or 4 3 foot high stacks of binders of documents, and I'm certain he read everything probably more than once, and he was looking at the selective picking out of phrases and issues in the documents by the defense. And I think he found a lot of concern with that, where they were trying to string cite and miscite and misquote things. The very documents which they were using, when he read them in totality, he found it to have significant points for the plaintiffs, that you had problems in there with Delta. So he did a real good job in evaluating all that medical expert testimony, as well as documents. And hearing from our experts, our doctors that treat patients every day, that are pediatric pulmonologists, pediatric infectious disease doctors, hospitalists, people that work in the hospital all the time, I think he found that to be very, very compelling in terms of his evaluation.
And this Brown study specifically says, we are not saying that masks aren't able to protect kids. They actually do protect kids.
The Brown study was something cited in the executive order. And when you actually evaluate the Brown study in the current form of it, first of all, it was never peer reviewed. This is it was a preprint, early draft out. They're trying to solicit peer review for it. But then the authors of the study themselves concede that there was no data used for the study that is Delta data. And they walked back nearly all the conclusions of the study and receded from the idea that masks weren't helpful and kids weren't getting COVID. So the underlying support for that executive order was essentially excised out of the order itself with no support for it. The other studies that were cited also, we went through every one of the studies that was cited by Dr. Bhattacharya. Every one of the studies cited was a pre-Delta study. So these all talk about, last school year, last summer, when you had less less of a prevalence, and it was COVID alpha. So all those were really comparing apples to oranges with this year's Delta variant.
Our guest is Charles R. Gallagher III, an attorney in St. Petersburg, also the plaintiff's attorney for the parents who schooled, the governor of the state of Florida for his executive order that forbid school districts from enacting mask mandates. And you're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. I'm going to read this two or three sentences from the Florida Phoenix. It says, Florida is one of only five states that has not submitted a state plan for COVID relief to the U.S. Department of Education, holding up billions in federal funds to help the Florida education system recover from the impacts of COVID-19 in schools. These funds could be used to address learning loss among students due to an irregular school year, ensure safe and sanitary schools as COVID remains a threat in the classroom, and provide mental health services to help students deal with the trauma of learning through a pandemic. I know this is outside, outside the scope of this, your trial, but I don't know. It just seems like Florida could be doing more instead of, it's worrying about these mask mandates more than it is about actually getting money to schools to fight, to help protect kids from COVID. Any thoughts on that?
And there appears to be this just over and over double down by the administration on efforts, reasonable efforts, to intercede and stop this problem. There simply would really be no reason why you wouldn't want to obtain those funds. And there are recent statements from the governor's office about that there was a issue on giving funds to the to the cities and so that people would need them. So that's a problem. I don't understand why there would be any issue relative to that. Help out the schools, help out the citizens and students with those funds that they could use them.
And the, also on that note, kind of the federal government announced that it's investigating five Republican-led states that banned mask requirements because those policies could mean discrimination against students who have disabilities or health issues. That's according to Axios. But Florida isn't one of those states now, I think maybe because of this judge's ruling. But what are your thoughts on that idea that it could be discrimination against students who have disabilities or health issues when you ban mask mandates?
And I agree with you. I think that was one of the reasons why the DOH, the federal DOH, did not enter into Florida right now. I think they also were hesitant to do it in Texas, given that Texas has rulings that have overruled mask mandate bans. But I would agree with the department, the federal Department of Health, that you probably have some issues of civil rights concerns here, where children that have identifiable, diagnosed health issues, disabilities alike, would be under IEPs, plans that provide them a certain kind of assistance. If they're being asked to go into a school setting that is not mandatory mask with this medical opt-out and exposing them to a greater risk of peril, students that have asthma and other kinds of respiratory issues are at a greater risk. And some of those students would have other issues where they couldn't wear masks. So you definitely have an intersection where the federal government would be able to step in and assist in this effort. We heard from many of our witnesses, our parents, and all of the state's parents actually had some identifiable health concerns, some disability, which was ironic because you would thought they would go the other way and have otherwise not non-health related folks testify. And then with regard to our witnesses as well, some of our witnesses had children that had health issues as well. They would be losing spots if they don't come to the brick and mortar class. And losing potential status for the next school year. So if you don't, there's a use it or lose it element to some of these things. And right now we were told that the Florida Virtual School, which would be an alternative for them, had stopped taking anybody at all. And there had been waiting lists for it, and a lot of the programs were actually entirely closed out. So there was no option for these folks aside from homeschooling and being in the home setting. So as a result of that, we think that the DOH is well suited to get involved, and it will be an additional help of those issues.
Our guest is Charles R. Gallagher III, an attorney in St. Petersburg. And Charles, I don't know, do you have to go, or do you want to stick out the rest of the hour?
I'm okay.
All right. Fantastic. He represented the parents who sued the governor over his executive order that banned mask mandates in schools, banned mask mandates by school districts, local school districts. So some of this is a question. Are some of your parents in the Pinellas School District, which still does not have a mask mandate? And if so, do you know what their plan is as far as petitioning, I guess, their local school board to enact one?
So they have been active in requesting the Pinellas County School Board to take notice of the of Judge Cooper's ruling. And the response they've received is that we understand the rulings by the court. We're waiting for the written order before we really reevaluate. But there's been great resistance that we found from Pinellas. If you look, the superintendent there was actually part of the DeSantis, one of the DeSantis reopening task forces. So there's been some allegations about maybe some political issues or why they're precluding that. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what we've heard from parents asserting some concerns. So those parents are contemplating if there is not going to be an action by the school board after this written order is memorialized, which really should be in the next few days, hopefully, they're contemplating some action themselves. As to the school board. So they're not going to kind of sit idly by and let them continue to really buck the tide of all the other surrounding counties and large counties in the state to protect the kids of the schools.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the reopening task force because that's the goal. I think that's it's safe to say that that's the goal of everyone. Everyone wants to have kids be able to learn in school classrooms. And so if you're, it seems like if you're in favor of having kids in classrooms learning, you would want to do that in the way that protects the most people, which is universal masking. So it's almost like, how is it that the people who want to send kids back to school, which is, I think, everyone, it seems like that they're hurting their own cause by keeping mask mandates off the table.
To use the words of a great sci-fi show, it's simply illogical. There's no reason why you would support the idea of banning mask mandates. You know, last school year, that was the norm. We had mask mandates in schools, and you had correspondingly good numbers. Yes, that was under COVID Alpha, COVID Wuhan, a little different beast in terms of the strain. But that worked in terms of last year's school year. And everybody to a T wants students in brick and mortar schools. You're going to gain more from education processes. You're going to have socialization issues. Everything about it is positive. There's really nothing about it at all. So why would you remove a layer of protection and basically have the student population in a much more perilous, dangerous place where they're going to have a higher likelihood of contracting COVID? As we sit right now, I think last week's numbers had one of the states had a 40% positivity rate. Many of the counties in the state, one of the counties had a 40% rate. Many of the counties are in the 30s, in the high 30s and 30s. And if you're not in the 30s, you're probably in the 20s. I think there were only maybe two or three that I recall seeing that were below 20s. So these are numbers we didn't have last year. We had numbers in the teens, and people were talking about that being excessive. To have a district in the 40% positivity rate shocks the mind, and how that would be not remedied with mandatory masking. So yes, it's concerning why you have this goal defeated by a very simple process and turning it into a political animal. You know, the whole messaging has been about, you know, parent choice, parent choice, parent choice. You know, nothing about this is parent choice. Every one of our experts to a T said, this is a public health issue, nothing more.
Our guest is Charles R. Gallagher III, an attorney in St. Petersburg who represented parents who sued the governor over his executive order to ban mask mandates by local school districts. I'm going to put a caller on the air, if you don't mind, Charles. This is Sharon in Pasco. Hi, Sharon. What would you like to say?
Hi. Well, thank you for the show. I've been following this. I have a lot of friends as teachers that are teachers. My question, and I guess I'm just confused about the Department of Education of Florida, and I don't understand how the Department of Education can be so persuaded by the governor and not take into account school boards, not take into account and asking teachers how they feel about it. And I just find it very offensive that our Department of Education, Richard Cochran, and in the state of Florida, is so politically involved with the governor and not representing teachers in school boards. And is that how it's set up?
Well, thank you for the question, Sharon. I'm going to ask our guest, Charles Gallagher, the attorney here, his opinion. And I'm going to piggyback on that, if you don't mind, so that I don't forget the second part of my question, which I think dovetails with Sharon's. And that's the order that came out a couple of weeks ago from the Department of Education that kind of opened the door for this mandatory masking with a medical opt-out, or with, I guess, maybe it said only opt-out. So what would you say, Charles, to Sharon's question about the Department of Education and Richard Corcoran?
So they are certainly duty bound to act in the best interest of schools and students. And what they're doing does not appear to comport with that guideline, that directive. The idea that they are really partnering up in full force on a political issue, as opposed to actions that would serve to protect the students of Florida, again, does not make a lot of sense in terms of their utility. I think you heard from Jacob Olivia, the chancellor from the school system in Florida, on direct exam and cross exam, and what came out there was actually really concerning, and that there was not a very good global view of safety and how to protect students best under Florida's system of education. There was what I found to be a whole lot of apathy there and indifference to the real needs of students and schools in favor of maybe political posturing as opposed to taking care of the kids. So, yes, that was concerning. I definitely think that doesn't make a lot of sense why you would place those interests above those of kids in the schools to remain safe and to remain, as well insulated from COVID spread as possible. So definitely concerned there, and we didn't understand that. But I think that it shows through, this has become more of a political issue in terms of the posturing out there by those state departments that it really should be. We're talking about executing policies for safe schools and governing schools, and it's going way beyond that.
And the Secretary of Education essentially answers to the governor really only, despite that Sharon's concerns that he maybe should concern himself about educators and students. Also, do you have any thoughts about that order? My question about that order that came out a few weeks ago that may have opened up the door for opt-outs?
Sure. So, and I think really what our experts are saying, and they've said kind of the theme, is that a mandatory masking scenario with parent opt-out is not mandatory masking. We heard lore of high percentages of folks masking out for no good reason, and that leaves students in that same commingled vulnerable population. So absolutely, there are people that require medical exemptions, and you heard three of them as the defense fact witnesses at trial, and the court eloquently said, I really think that you all qualify for medical opt-outs, and your doctors can help you achieve that. So those folks, no one's talking about those folks. We're talking about the ideological reasons of not masking, and there was a curious profile by John Oliver's show weeks ago, and they interviewed a father, and the father was telling his child, the child liked to wear a mask. He felt like he was a superhero wearing a mask. And the father told the kid, don't say you like doing that. Don't say that. And the father's also comments were, I'm an American. We don't have to do anything that we're told to do. So this is defiance, for the greater good. But then telling his kid who was doing it and enjoying doing it, don't do it. So frustrating to have that be inserted into this whole calculus of people choosing for no reason not to wear masks as some statement or as some ideological basis that was, again, there was a window under that order that allowed that.
Charles Gallagher III, we have about a minute or so left in the show, but what should we expect for the next steps? We'll probably get the judge's order in writing this week, and then what?
So, yes, the expectation is maybe late today, maybe tomorrow, maybe midday tomorrow, there'd be a signed order. As soon as that order is signed, I would expect the state to file a notice of appeal. Thereafter, as quickly as that's filed, we're going to file a motion to vacate the appellate court stay's effect of the trial court order. And so what that basically means, kind of in lay terms, is when they file their appeal, the appellate court has jurisdiction over it, and that order is kind of frozen, so to speak. We're going to ask the trial court to ensure that the order stays in place pending the appeals resolution so that there's protection during this whole time. And we're hopeful the court would consider that and grant that motion to vacate the stay so that we can keep that protection in place for school boards. Thereafter, there would be a full-on appeal with briefs, probably oral argument, and a whole longer time frame schedule than the quick filing and trial that we had to date.
Charles, thanks so much for coming back on WMNF. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. All the best. Have a great one.
All right. Thank you. You too. Charles Gallagher III is an attorney in St. Petersburg. He represented the plaintiffs in their lawsuit against Governor Ron DeSantis, who enacted an executive order against school boards enacting mandatory masking. Well, thanks to Barbara Fling for answering our phones today. I'm Sean Canaan. Stay tuned now for Janelle Irwin in her new time. That's 11 o'clock on Tuesday mornings, and that's coming up after NPR headlines. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Bradenton, and Gulfport. Thanks so much for listening to WMNF. Stay tuned.